The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Arsenal's title push took another turn for the worse this weekend as they threw away another two-goal lead at West Ham and ended up dropping points. 2-2 was the final score, as Manchester City gained ground with a 3-1 win earlier on Saturday against Leicester. Bournemouth continued their search for safety in the Premier League as they went to Tottenham, took the lead a couple of times, and ended up winning 3-2 with a late winner from their new signing Utara. Aston Villa continued their push for the top four place, winning 3-0 over top four rivals Newcastle at home, and Chelsea devolved further into misery as they threw away a one-goal lead at home against Brighton to lose 2-1. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to episode 405 of the Ghost Goal Podcast. We're doing another early morning pod for you, so apologies if the voice sounds a little scratchy this morning. Javier, how are you doing? Doing okay after that disappointing result on the weekend?
No, Alex, it's been better. You know, for once I decided to tweet during the middle of a game. You know, we were up 2-0, 10 minutes in. I was, you know, cruising, thinking we were going to destroy everything. We were going to win this game 8-0. And that is not what happened,
and not
Alex.
So fast.
That is not what happened.
Yeah. Let's start off there? Because that is probably the most notable result of the weekend.
Yeah, the way that the game started, Alex, it seemed like it was going to be walk in the park, easy day for Arsenal. You know, we were playing incredibly well those first 30 minutes. West Ham didn't have a sniff. I mean, didn't even like come down our side of the field. It looked just completely dominant. And then a boneheaded tackle by Gabriel. And I have a caveat to this because it's ridiculous that they didn't show the replay of the handball for Declan Rice. Now that, you know, you see the angle that absolutely the referees saw, it was a clear handball. Clear handball in the build-up.
And this was in the build-up to the penalty. So I think the reason why they didn't give it as a handball was because they give it as a handball for the attacking team if an attacking player's hand touches the ball in the build-up to a goal. Now, it seems like there isn't the same sort of detail in the rule when it comes to, you know, something that ends up being a penalty. But it is still a handball by Declan Rice that helps him win the ball back, and, you know,
it made him the touch that his hand took was a massive touch that put the ball in front of his feet. You can't, like, I mean, it completely changed that play.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with
you. So, that penalty should have never been given. It was absolutely boneheaded by Gabriel to go to the floor like that. But I also kind of think it was a dive because you see the player, Gabriel's basically on his knees, but not making any movement toward the ball, and the player just runs into Gabriel.
It's a penalty. The player didn't run into Gabriel. He knocked the ball past him, and then Gabriel was like starting to go in for a slide tackle, but then like bailed out of the slide tackle instead, just like crashed into, I think it was Ben Rama's knees. But like if he had successfully pulled out of the slide tackle, then an Arsenal defender would have just collected the ball and like kicked it out for a corner or something. It wouldn't have been a penalty. But I think the way it played out, it definitely was a penalty. But it was because of the Declan Rice handball that I'll agree with you that like it probably shouldn't have been given. Like VAR should be able to take a look at that and make the logical step that, you know, there's not even a chance of a penalty if the ball doesn't hit Declan Rice's hand as he's winning it back. I do just want to mention we did watch this game together. I can't remember the last time we watched an Arsenal game in the same room. So we got to start doing that more.
No, we don't, Alex.
You know?
It's bad luck. But no,
I'll be showing up to your place, right, kicking your door down for the Chelsea-Arsenal game and for the City-Arsenal game. I'll be there, Javier. You won't be able to get rid of me.
I really don't like that we go up 2-0 in the last two games and almost stop playing our game. You know, we've been brilliant in the beginning of the first half and almost the entire season. You know, we've been very, very good starting games. And it seemed like, you know, over the last few games, before these two games, we'd been scoring 3 and 4 goals in bunches. And it looked like we'd solved that, like, you know, slight weakness of ours that was, you know, we'd only score a couple of goals and then the other team might be able to get into the game. But for some reason, it kind of seems like we've run out of steam a little bit. We also just don't have nearly as much security at the back without Saliba and with holding in the side, which is why we've conceded, you know, 6 goals in our last 4 games, which for a team that was has been, you know, one of the best teams defensively the entire season, that's a lot of goals that we've been shipping. And there's, you know, Ramsdale's been really good too. It could have been more than just 6 goals in these last few games. So, you know, the fact that West Ham were able to come back into this game, you know, Saka missed a penalty. That was probably Saka's worst game in an Arsenal shirt in years, since probably his like debut season when he was playing Europa and stuff. And he was, you know, still slightly erratic, but still a great player then. You know, now I still, you know, even though he had a bad game, okay, to be fair to him, it's been 3 bad games in a row now for Bukayo Saka, but he did have that really good game against Palace where he had a brace and an assist. So it's not that long ago, you know, it's been 4 games since he's had a, you know, like a stunning game. It's not like he hasn't been a part of the game though in these, you know, in during these 3 games. He's still involved somewhat in build up and in stuff. His decision making in the final third hasn't been very good, you know, on counterattacks and stuff like that. And his movement as well hasn't been like what it was earlier in the season. It could be, again, that he's a little bit tired, that he needs a little bit of rest or needs to be benched. But I still think he's a phenomenal player. I think he's going to bounce back and keep doing what he's been doing this season, and, you know, going into the run-in. So I don't think this is going to hold up.
Well, this kind of ties into what I was going to ask you about, where I know it's been like a big a point of pride for Arsenal fans for most of this season, how you guys have one of the youngest teams in the league, and that this is obviously going to lead to success for many years in the near future here for Arsenal. But do you think that there's a counterpoint to that, that, you know, it might just be a bit too soon, like the age of the team, and, you know, throwing
just
away
look,
multiple
just look
two
at, just
goal
look
leads
at last season.
In a row now might
look
be
at last season.
A symptom.
We had top four, like, yeah, wrapped up, basically. And the challenge at hand last year wasn't anything close to the challenge we have this year, right? Like, last year it was, you know, you got to beat Tottenham and Newcastle away.
Not even beat them. You
right,
just
draw
them.
Newcastle, draw Tottenham, and you have top four. So we messed that up, and then we just had to beat Newcastle, and we have top four.
Or draw.
Again.
Oh, wait.
We
no,
had
to
beat Newcastle.
You had to beat them
at that point.
True,
but
yeah.
It was that... You know, that was it, though. And we choked in that scenario. So now we're facing the best team in the world, who has won 4 out of the last 5 Premier Leagues, picked up the best striker in the world, who has now shattered every single record. I mean, every goal Erling Haaland scores from now till the end of the season is a record breaker in terms of all-time goal scorer for a Premier League player for the season, and if in the Premier League every goal he scores is a record breaker for most goals scored in a Premier League season. So, yeah. That's what we're up against. And like you said, Alex, to have a young team, you know, there's some experience, and you can tell we missed, there was no Zinchenko in this game, and Kieran Tierney just is not good in that inverted role. You know, he's like a marauding defending left back. He you know, he defends well, he'll get down the wing, he crosses well, but he's not good at like dictating play from midfield, which Arteta was trying to get him to do in this game. So we really, really miss Zinchenko, or like Tomiyasu, who's actually okay in that role, but he's out for the rest of the season. So, you know, missing him, missing Saliba, you know, 3 out of our back line was out this game, and it showed. You know, we still don't have as much control in games. Even when we go up a couple of goals, it feels like we need 3 or 4 to really close out a game right now. Now these last couple of games are going to give teams hope from now to the end of the season. Every team that plays us, even if we go up a couple goals, will think to themselves, oh, Liverpool and West Ham did it. Like, why can't we do it? You know, just don't give up hope. Arsenal might slip up, and it's gonna be hard from now to the end of the season. Every single game we play, teams are going to be, you know, fighting to the death against us. So it feels like it's going to be too much to climb, Alex. You know, we had that lead. It felt like these games we needed to just win to go into the City game.
You use the past tense, but you still have a 4-point lead.
We still have,
it's just that City have a game in hand. They're on 70 points with 30 games played. You are on 74 points with 31 games played. You obviously play each other in just over a week, I think, at the Etihad. City beat you guys 3-1 at the Emirates. I think they're the only team to beat you at the Emirates in normal time this season. Not going to count Sporting Lisbon in that, since they got a draw and then won on penalties. So they're in excellent form themselves. So assuming they win that Arsenal home game and then win their game in hand, they would then have a 2-point lead on you.
Now, the other...
It's still somewhat in your hands.
The other scenario, though, is that we play Southampton before that Manchester City game. So if we beat Southampton at home, we'll have a 7-point lead going into the Manchester City game. And then if we beat Manchester City in that game, granted, Manchester City will have 2 games in hand, but I'd rather have the points than the games in hand. And we could have a 10-point lead on Manchester City if we somehow beat them at the Etihad. So it's like you said, Alex, it's not all doom and gloom yet. You know, it's not like we've lost these games. We're still on a 9-game unbeaten run. It just feels like after going up 2 goals in back-to-back games and choking both of those leads, you know, and almost losing both of those games too. You know, there was chances for both sides. West Ham at, you know, Bowen needed, Ramsdale needed to make a big save, and the Liverpool game there were loads of big saves. So I want Saliba back. I don't think he's going to be back for the Manchester City game. Might be too soon, but if we can somehow maybe get a draw in that game and Saliba comes back for the Newcastle game, then there's still hope. So
don't give
I'm
up
not
yet,
giving
Javier.
Up yet.
It's not
I'm
looking
not
good,
up
but
yet,
don't,
but it's
don't
not
give
looking
up.
Good yet. City are favorites now, so.
Yeah, and like we said last week, that's exactly where you want them. You know, they're fighting on 3 different fronts. They've got the FA Cup next
weekend
against
Sheffield.
It's my only
hope, like, that they can start picking up some injuries, that, like, fatigue, all that stuff. But, I mean, they've got such a big squad, so many players. You know, they're bringing in Foden, Mahrez, Bernardo Silva off the bench.
I mean, this point of the season was the point I've been waiting for.
Yeah, we've been talking about it all season.
Whenever someone has been like, oh, do you think Arsenal can do it? I'm just like, City will round into form eventually. Like, they'll go on their run. Maybe they'll slip up one more time, but I expect them to still, you know, come back and win the league while challenging for the FA
Cup. I saw
a
graphic of
the
last, you know, 4 out of the last 5 years in the run-in. In the Premier League for Manchester City, you know, then they've like I said before, they've won 4 out of the last 5, but they at maximum drop points in 3 games in the run in during the last 5 seasons, and it's been like it's been like one loss and 2 draws, or like 2 losses and 1 draw, but like they literally and in some of the they've dropped cases they only drop points in 1 game in the last 10. So, like, their form in the run-in at the end of the season is always almost impeccable, and it's frightening. That's why I don't think we're going to win it either, because their form is just... the fact that they played this Leicester game, they went up 3-0 20 minutes in and then took off Haaland, Stones at halftime, and then brought off, a bunch of other players 15 minutes later. And, yeah, they didn't look amazing after they brought off those 5 players and brought off their entire first team, and Leicester kind of got back into it. But it just – they were destroying them in those first 45 minutes, and they were able to save players for Bayern. You know, they'll be able to play that Bayern game probably pretty comfortably, and then the FA Cup game at the weekend. It feels like it's too much, Alex. It feels like it's too much.
Yeah, the FA Cup game at the weekend, they got the easy side of the draw with Sheffield United. Now, I'm sure Sheffield will, you know, put everything they have into that game, but you would expect City to still win even with, like, a rotated team. You know, 2 games outside of the
thing.
Premier League before that Arsenal game, but they still can kind of manage.
One more thing that
games.
Makes me not think we're gonna do it, Alex, is that I haven't been in love with Arteta's subs this entire season. I think that Arteta doesn't know very well yet how to sub players at the right times. I think a lot of times he either waits too long, like he did with Bukayo Saka in this game, and Granit Xhaka. Both were not very good in this game. I think both of them could have come off far earlier. You could have brought on Jorginho, you know, in the 60th minute. You could have brought on Reece Nelson much earlier as well, given us Trossard I think Jesus should have stayed on the pitch. You know, you have a Trossard, Nelson, Jesus front three. I don't know why you bring on Fabio Vieira and you take off Odegaard as well. He's been taking off Odegaard in the last couple of games, and Odegaard has been pretty much our best player, like our driving force in these games. The only player who looks in the midfield like he can do anything on the ball. As soon as he comes off, we look like we're lost. And I think Arteta's substitutes in these last two games have not been good. And he's a young manager. This is his first job. So another reason why I don't think we're going to win the title is because he's going to keep doing this. Like, he's got to learn the hard way, and the hard way is losing, dropping points, and, you know, not having the right score. I think he'll learn from it. I think he'll improve. Another thing that's just like kind of been off-putting for me is, you know, not being able to substitute players at the right time, leaving on players too long, you know, not knowing when to bring them on and bring on the wrong players as well. I think Smith Rowe could have come on instead of, you know, Vieira or even, you know, Nelson, but he didn't even come on at all in this game. So again, just kind of weird substitutions for me.
All right. Well, moving on to the other surprise result of this weekend, Tottenham lost 3-2 at home to Bournemouth. Bournemouth
continues really, surprising us, really, man. Like,
surprising at every
turn.
They're
almost safe. That's kind of crazy to say, right?
I feel bad about my Bournemouth to get relegated pick now. Like, now
I'm 33 points. They've won three out of the last four games. What a run. What a run from the Cherries.
Yeah, and they had like a lead late in that game. And then the Spurs January signing, Danjuma, scored in the 88th minute to make it 2-2. And you kind of thought they're like, oh, damn. But, Too bad for Bournemouth. You know, they would played so well, and then out of nowhere, their new signing, Bournemouth signing from January, Utara, scores in the 90th minute to win it for them. Do we want to focus this analysis more on like the shit show that is Spurs, or do we want to focus it more on Bournemouth? Because I feel like, yes, Spurs are a shit show, and we've covered that plenty before, but I think Bournemouth are just much better than we anticipated. Like, yes, they've had long bad spells, but they're one of these teams that like actually never gives up, even when they're down in a game or being outplayed and the score is level. And
I said it earlier in the season, I think they're the best low block team in the league. I think they're the best team and like have the best physicality with players like Billing and Solanke up top. You know, there's just loads of huge players over 6 foot all over the squad, and like you said, Alex, they never give up. They've got a nice little tiny home stadium, but it's still a raucous atmosphere. I think it's like 20,000 or 19,000. It's a tiny stadium, but the fact that they're still keeping up in the they were in the Premier League for a long time under Eddie Howe, so I think that spine is still at the club. It's the reason they were able to come right back up, and we definitely underestimated them. So apologies to Bournemouth. I don't think they're safe yet. I think there's a lot of good teams that can still catch up to them, but you know, if they play West Ham next, if they go out and get a result against West Ham, like they're right next to each other in the table, that would be massive.
Yeah, I do just want to hit on some of their signings because I mean some of their players that were there even last time they were in the Premier League, like Philip Billing, he's been excellent for them. But then some of their new signings, like Matias Vinha, the left back from the Uruguayan left back they brought in on loan from Roma, he scored the opener in this Tottenham game. Neto, the Brazilian goalkeeper that they brought in from, like, well, they got him on a free transfer at the beginning of the season. He's been much better than I think Mark Travers could have been for them, the Irish goalkeeper that they had in the championship last season. There's Marcos Senesi, an Argentine center back they brought in from Feyenoord, who's looked good. And then Dango Ouattara, the winger that I mentioned. They bought him from Lorient in France for 22 million. So that's like that's looked like an excellent, like 22 million is a good amount of money. But, you know, in this market, 22 million for a 20-year-old French winger. Well, no, I guess he's not French. He's
from Burkina Faso, Alex.
He's Burkina Faso. He's Burkinabe. But he's been excellent for them. Maybe not in terms of like racking up goals and assists like in high numbers, but he's a real threat with his pace out wide. He combines well with
Solanke. He was a nightmare
against
us. Yeah, I mean he's a tricky, pacey winger, and those are not like easy to find in the Premier League. So, And I agree, Alex. I mean, you look at some of the players that Bournemouth relied on last time they were in the Premier League when they got relegated that are still in this team. Players like Lewis Cook, who was a huge part of that team. But even at the beginning of the season, we were looking at players like Kiefer Moore and Jadon Anthony were getting a lot of game time. Adam Smith, you know, even Marcus Sense. All of these players aren't, they're on the bench. They're still part of the team, but they're not, you know, like you said, these new signings, they've got a little bit more depth now, and it feels like...
Senesi is one of the new signings. They bought him, I think, in January.
But it looks like they, you know, they've got more players that they can rely on now, and it's resulted in... I mean, to be fair, though, to Spurs, I think Tottenham started off the game well. You know, they had that another goal from Heung-min Son. It looked like they were going to be cruising. They have pretty much their whole first team, right? Like... I think the problem is they haven't had a fully fit midfield, right? They've been playing Oliver Skip and Højbjerg. You know, they've really missed that Betancourt injury, that him being out for the rest of the season. I think it really, really put, you know, this team down a level. I think not having depth in that midfield, they're going to need another big midfield signing. Remember, they still have Ndombele on their books, I believe, and he's just on loan, right? So...
Yeah, and then the one that really hasn't panned out is Yves Bissouma, the midfielder from Brighton. He was not very good earlier this season, and then he got injured for a long period
of
time.
Yeah, I remember, Alex, when I went back and listened to the pod at the beginning of the season, you were trying to say Tottenham had just as good signings as Arsenal, and you were praising Yves. So was I, though. We were both saying he was going
to
be an amazing...
Yeah, I was about to say, you didn't disagree with me at the time. Like, we all thought Bissouma was going to be like a pretty good
purchase for them.
But
he's just been a terrible disappointment for Tottenham.
Yeah. Like, among others, you know, like Jed Spence they brought in as a right wing back.
I also don't like the Clement Lenglet. I know he came off injured in this game, and then after he came off, like, Tottenham conceded. But I'm not a fan of him. I don't know. He's just on loan, maybe, but yeah... They've been relying on him a lot. And again, I think Tottenham need a lot of signings in the summer. They have too many players on loan, like Danjuma, like you know, Lenglet, that they're relying on. And then there's players like Ivan Perisic, even, that, like, they need better wingbacks. They need more depth in midfield. You know, Richarlison, I don't know what's going on with him either. Like, he hasn't really been a part of this.
Has he still not scored?
Yeah, still not scored. Just ridiculous. You know, he was scoring scissor kicks at the World Cup for Brazil, but the dude can't get a sniff at Tottenham, you know? I don't know what's going on there either.
Yeah, and I think like a significant part of this is the fact that ever since firing Conte, they did institute Stellini, the assistant manager under Conte, as the head coach. He got a red card in the Brighton home game last week, so I think he wasn't on the sideline for the game this week. And they brought back Ryan Mason, their former midfielder, who was a caretaker manager after Mourinho was fired. So he's you know, at the helm, or was at the helm, for this Bournemouth game. Again, like a guy in his 30s who had to retire early because of a head injury that Gary Cahill gave him. He's like someone that, like, is from the club, from the academy, that they trust to, like, see out the rest of this season as, like, an assistant to Stellini. But, you know, this was kind of a weird spot for him to have to step up and be like the head coach for this game. They still have a lot to play for. So the players should still be very motivated to go out there and get results. They're only 3 points off Newcastle, who are in fourth place, though Newcastle have a game in hand, very much still in the top four race, but it just kind of feels like their Champions League hopes are just kind of petering out ever since Conte got fired. Do you think they should have, like, cleaned out the whole head coaching staff room, including Stellini, and brought in, like, an actual manager to play out these last...
I do. I think it's bizarre. I think they had an immediate need to bring in, like, a world-class manager or the best manager they could to try to get something still out of the season. I don't think it's Chelsea,
a very
where you want a caretaker,
Chelsea,
exactly.
Right.
You know, where you can see out the rest of the season, figure things out. That's not where Tottenham are at right now. And I think this is the type of move, keeping Stellini, that... possibly will now, like, in the minds of maybe, like, someone like Harry Kane, he'll try to force a move now this summer, because he'll just be like, you know, you guys didn't even try at the end of last season. I don't want to be at this club anymore, you know, and he might try to leave. So, but you mentioned Newcastle, Alex, and Newcastle got a walloping this week. We said they had to put their nuts on the table. And they did it. Aston Villa, Unai Emery. Good evening.
Yeah, not so ridiculous saying they're in the Champions League conversation now, is it? They're only 6 points, I think. Yeah, 6 points back of Newcastle in fourth. Newcastle have the game in hand.
They made Newcastle
look
pretty pedestrian. Like, I thought Villa were really, they were worth it for the 3-0 win in this. I mean, how did Unai Emery get them to this point? Do you think they're going to fall off soon? I mean, Ollie Watkins, another brace. I think he's now 16 goals for the season.
He's up there. He's scoring seemingly every single week. I'm just looking at their upcoming fixtures now, just to like get a better sense of what they have left in the league. They'll have Brentford away this Saturday. Brentford, their form has kind of fallen off a bit, and Villa's away form has been amazing, especially Watkins, his away form. He's scoring seemingly every time at home and away. Then Villa will host Fulham. They'll go to Manchester United at the end of April. They'll go to Wolves, host Spurs, go to Liverpool, and then host Brighton. So those last couple of games of the season look a lot tougher. I mean, it kind of may depend on where some of those teams are in terms of the relegation race for Wolves, or the top four battle for teams like Spurs and Liverpool and Brighton. But they're putting themselves like still in the mix, I think. When you have a player who's in as good of goal scoring form as Ollie Watkins is right now, and you have like a tangible, solid defense. We mentioned last week how like players like Tyrone Mings has turned his form around completely. Emi Martinez is playing excellently in goal at the moment.
Ashley Young's been pretty great at wingback. Like, I don't understand how this team's looked so good. I mean, just to the point, you know, Emery only made two changes in like the Callum Chambers came on the 85th minute and this John Duran guy in the 91st minute. So he really believes in his team and his starting 11 right now, and it's showing. I mean, they're playing so well. You know, I think they could get a Europa League spot, Alex. I mean, I still don't think they could get Champions League, but this result was huge.
Okay, so here's the thing. I agree with you that if you're asking me if I'm going to update my predictions for top four, I wouldn't do so at the moment. I would still favor Newcastle and Manchester United to be the two teams alongside Arsenal and Manchester City to get Champions League places for next season. Now, the door is like slightly ajar because Aston Villa got such a big result against, you know, a direct rival in Newcastle for the top four. And now it's also looking like Manchester United will not have Lisandro Martinez, one of their center backs, for the rest of the season. And Rafael Varane is going to be out as well. Now, United still got the win at Nottingham Forest.
Pretty easy win for them.
You can kind of cool off those like worries, but you know, United will have tougher games than Nottingham Forest away that they could still drop points in. I'm guessing Villa will cool off at some point, and they'll end up with either a Europa League spot or a Conference League spot, depending on like how that all pans out with, you know, who wins the FA Cup. You know, like if Brighton win the FA Cup, beat Manchester United, and beat Manchester City. While that's unlikely, if they win the FA Cup, they would get a Europa League place, and one of those Europa League places in the table would then turn into a Conference League place. So some of it is outside of their hands, but, you know, mathematically and on the form they're currently on, Villa should have reason, they have plenty of reason to be confident that they could, you know, catch up on those top four teams and maybe sneak a Champions League place. That would make Unai Emery coach of the season. If he gets them into top four, and I think if Arteta fails to win the league title at Arsenal, that would get Unai Emery manager of the season in the Premier League.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. But Alex, I was going to say, your transitions, you're bringing up teams at the right time. Let's talk about Brighton, Alex, and your team. We don't have to talk too much about your team because there isn't a lot to talk about. But
I was about to say, there's not really much to go over because we said that Brighton were going to beat us, and they did.
It wasn't as convincing as
it should have been.
It was pretty convincing. They should have probably had three or four.
No, I was saying, yeah, exactly. I was saying going into this that Brighton were going to like walk all over us. They did in terms of like the passage of play, but they didn't get the goals that I thought they were going to. It took until the 69th minute for Nciso to score that rocket of a shot that put them up 2-1. And we had a couple of chances to make it 2-2 after that.
To be fair, they had to make
just,
two changes,
you know,
in the first half. Veltman came off in the 28th minute and Ferguson in the 39th minute. So you know, I know that those two players ended up getting goals for them. Welbeck and Nciso, the two substitutes, ended up getting the goals for Brighton. But, you know, their game plan had to change initially with two first half substitutes. So, and you guys scored early on from a bullshit deflection.
So their game plan didn't even necessarily have to change. They were walking all over us, like before and after. I think De Zerbi took the opportunities from those two injuries to basically say, like, okay, we're struggling to put the ball in the back of the net, but we're creating plenty of chances. Let's put two more attacking players on. Pretty basic arithmetic here, and that will improve our chances of scoring, and it obviously worked. But we played like straight into their hands. Frank Lampard tried to.
Do you have any positives, Alex? Did you like anyone's performance?
Yeah, I mean, Mudryk was okay. It was one of his better performances relative to how he's looked in a lot of games before this. Gallagher looked very good, and it's like a good sign that we can maybe get some good performances out of him, and the higher ups of the club can be convinced to not sell him this summer because those rumors keep popping up. But yeah, not much after that, because like I said, we played directly into their hands, trying to man mark them like high up the pitch. They just dinked passes like around us, back, balls over the top. It was easy for them. And also we had Trevor Chalobah playing right back, and Mitoma just rinsed him routinely. And then once we brought on Reece James, Mitoma didn't really do anything for the rest of the game. So I get that we're like kind of resting players for that Real Madrid second leg, but that one feels like it's over with us being down 2-0 and no Chilwell. So it's looking tough for Chelsea to see when we're going to get our next win, because when you look at the schedule, it's not ideal. But I'm sure some team will make a mistake that lets us like win a game or get a draw or something, and we can finally, you know, stave off relegation. So that's something to look forward to for Chelsea fans, finally being safe. Who do you want to hit on next? One more before we go.
We got to talk about Crystal Palace, Alex, because Roy has turned it around. Three straight wins since he came in as a brace. You know, he has Eze somehow now playing out of his skin again, or for the first time, really, because he never really played out of his skin under Vieira. It was always just flashes. But him and Olise have been brilliant, and yeah, what can you say about Roy Hodgson? And this was a huge game for Southampton. You know, they were at home in front of their fans. They needed a result against Palace, and they were pretty dreadful. So I think Southampton, they're going down. I think they're the only team that I'm like 100% they're going down, which is really sad because they've been a historic team in the league. And they traditionally have been a team that has competed mid-table, and they usually have gotten rated. They've gotten rated over and over and over again for their talent. You know, by teams like even like Manchester City, Chelsea, Arsenal, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been hard
Liverpool.
Over the years. Yeah,
you're
Liverpool.
Missing the big one.
Yeah,
there.
Liverpool. It's been hard over the years to replace the talent that they've lost, you know, and it feels a little bit bad for them because I don't think that they've done bad in the Premier League during their time.
Well, I don't even think, like, we're talking about them like that because they don't have any wins in their last five. The only point they've earned was a home draw against Tottenham that got Conte fired. But they're 4 points off safety. They're in last place on 23 points. But then there's Leicester in 19th on 25 points. But then above them, there's two teams, Everton and Nottingham Forest, on 27 points. Forest are the team that's in the relegation zone at the moment. And then you've got Leeds just ahead of those two teams.
Damn,
on 29
I didn't realize
points.
They were that, like, yeah, maybe they could
so,
still, I guess,
you know,
they could
eight
still
games
make a
left.
Run. Yeah, it's not
like
over.
Like, we've
for
seen
them.
Teams after long spells of playing terribly put two or three games of results together, and all of a sudden their fortunes are completely reversed. So I wouldn't go, like, locking in any of these teams to be relegated just yet. So Southampton would be the best bet, though, because they've been the most mediocre out of all of these relegation threatened teams. And even with the new signings they've made and changing their manager twice, it hasn't seemed to make a difference. So it seems the most hopeless, but they still have somewhat of a chance. All right. Do we want to take a look at some of the games coming up this weekend? There are a few teams that aren't going to be playing in the Premier League because of the FA Cup semifinals. There's Manchester City versus Sheffield United on Saturday at 11:45 a.m. And then Sunday, Brighton versus Manchester United at 11:30 a.m. And, you know, the winner of those two games will play each other in the FA Cup final. But then in the Premier League, we've got a rare Friday kickoff with Arsenal hosting Southampton. I think you guys should handle business in that one.
Yeah, it should be. We're at home. Should be a good bounce back game.
There's a couple of relegation six pointers with Leicester hosting Wolves Saturday at 10 a.m. Bournemouth hosting West Ham. I think you mentioned that earlier. That's going to be Sunday at 9 a.m. And then the biggest game in the Premier League is probably going to be the top four clash, or the clash with most Champions League implications. It's going to be Newcastle versus Spurs Sunday at 9 a.m. Which way are we leaning so far in that one? It's Newcastle hosting Spurs, so I think it should be Newcastle as favorites to win that one and solidify their place.
Newcastle are also not going to be, you know, super confident after that 3-0 result against Villa. So, but they did get Miguel Barone back. I haven't been in love with like the Anthony Gordon, Jacob Murphy start that they did last time. I think they've got to start Miguel on their own. They've got to, you know, maybe start Callum Wilson and Isak, like those three. I don't know, but Joe Willock as well. It just I don't know how was doing this last game against Villa. I think it was a little bit of a fluke, but I think if they start closer to their starting 11, they've been starting all season. Now, I mean, the rest of the starting 11 was the same, but I think they'll be fine. I think Newcastle win it narrowly 2-1, but it should be a great game. I think it's gonna be super competitive for Tottenham. That it's, you know, it's a huge game for Tottenham, because if they lose this game, then they're going to be under a lot of pressure from teams behind them, and Newcastle are going to, you know, kind of like,
and the gap is
going to
be
exactly.
The gap is going to be too big.
You know,
in front
they have to
them.
Win this game to like give themselves hope of top four, and, you know, keep other teams in it as well. So I think a lot of teams will be rooting for Tottenham win.
Oh, just because of Saudi Arabians at Newcastle that way?
No, because of, you know, Brighton. Aston Villa still have outside shots of Champions League, I'm sure they want.
Oh, okay.
They don't want Newcastle to keep winning.
Well, then a draw would still be like helpful there. Not to Spurs, but to, you know, keeping Newcastle down a bit. A draw wouldn't be the worst thing. It's tough to go to Newcastle and get a result. Like, you know, City only got a draw there. Manchester United just lost there. I think Liverpool beat them, but like not many other teams have had success up at St. James's Park, so that should be an interesting one. All right, well, let's wrap things up there. Javier, keep holding on to your belief. You know, it's not over yet. You guys can still do this. Keep on.
It's not over yet.
You know,
we still have this
hold on to your hope.
Game, Alex. We have the City game. My hope will be held on till the City game.
All right, well, if you want to follow Javier on Twitter, he did finally tweet something about the Arsenal game this weekend. So, you know, we're making small baby steps towards him becoming more active on Twitter. if you want to follow him, you can follow
this.
Him at, at JavierRev9 is his Twitter handle. Mine is at ASMoss92 for both Twitter and Instagram. And if you follow the podcast socials at GhostSkullPod, you can keep up with any updates on, you know, when the pod's coming out. We'll, you know, drop a tweet asking for reactions or questions for upcoming episodes, and you can respond to those and, you know, get your thoughts and or questions heard on the pod. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please drop a rating and review. Those new ratings and reviews help new listeners to find the pod, and we always appreciate it when you guys can help us grow this thing. Enjoy the games this weekend, everyone, and until next time. See ya.